And welcome to all of our listeners in the US and abroad. Today, I have my dear friend, Captain Monroe, my co-host, my cohort, my best friend. Captain, thank you so much for joining me today.
Always a pleasure. Always like being here, and we always have a lot of fun in our conversations. So we'll see how today's conversation goes.
Today shall be no different, my friend. So again, welcome to everyone. Season 3, episode 4 of the Doc Talk podcast. My friend Captain Monroe with the International Association of Maritime Port Executives and myself, Amy Andrus, the Inland Rivers, Ports and Terminals Association. We're just simply here to bring you all the latest and greatest, the gossip and what's going on trend-wise in the maritime industry, both in our river system and in our deep blue ocean waters. So welcome again to everyone. Captain, I am so excited to put you on the spot today and ask you. I know that you just held a big event down in Gulfport, Mississippi, kind of continuing education for the legal kind of realm and aspect. How did it go? What'd you learn? What's the newest and greatest gossip?
Well, I think it was very exciting, and the nice thing about it was that your conferences, you generally have several hundred people who come, right? Our conference, we had less than 50 people, and they were all senior managers and executives and everything. And there was a great discussion on logistics. There was the discussion about our new undergraduate program for trying to encourage young people at college age to come into the industry. But I think, and then of course we were welcomed by John Nass, who gave us a great talk about what was happening down in Gulfport. I think the most interesting thing of it was Beth Rooney's conversation with us about what happened with the Grimaldi Ro-Ro ship and all of the issues that emerged, all the mistakes that were made, and of course the two lives that were cost, two firemen. She gave us a very blunt, as Beth always does, very blunt discussion about what could have done better, what should have gone better. And basically it was a good warning to everybody to pay attention to th simple things like the international shore connection for firefighters, how to deal with crews, how to manage and make sure that terminal staff and everybody was aware of it. So it was really quite a wonderful discussion, and I think was
Now,
surprising to people.
but for our listeners that may not be familiar with what you're talking about, this is Miss Beth Ann Rooney out of the Port of New York, New Jersey, and this is the Grimaldi ship. It caught fire at the dock.
Yeah, there was a fire aboard the ship, and what happened was this happened several years ago, Beth is the CEO of the Port of New York and New Jersey. She's head of the maritime department up there, also a graduate of our program. And she this Grimaldi ship had come into the dock to unload cargo, and they were using equipment to put our previously owned vehicles and try to position them onto the vessel and everything like that. And the vehicle that they had employed was a modified Jeep that they were basically pushing the cars into position and everything, and it caught on fire, and of course it set the decks on fire, little things that happened, like they used the CO2 system to suppress the fire, but there was a door open, the crew went aboard and tried to fight the fire. They didn't really have the right equipment and everything. There was nobody on the terminal side aware of the plan or even how to use the international shore connection. So it was quite remarkable, because we all sat there as we listened to her, said, "There, but by the grace of God, go us." And so as a result of that discussion, we have added new aspects into our coastal port tariffs in regards to making sure that the international shore connection, which is the connection that allows the firefighting systems on the shoreline to be connected to the ship's firefighting system, so that there's plenty of water pressure and everything. And we've added that to the tariffs where people need to be aware of it, need to be instructed where the positions are before any type of cargo handling goes on. It's a fire and safety issue. And unfortunately, as I say, it costs two firemen's lives.
Absolutely. And that's so heartbreaking. My heart goes out to those families. It wasn't too long ago, a couple weeks ago, that we actually had a flash fire on board a vessel. It was currently being repaired. But that employee did have severe burns, was airlifted to the hospital, and thank God, he survived. But it does really bring forth the issue of, emergency response, and how often is too often, which is never, to be connecting with our local firefighters. As far as, here's what we have going on in our facility. Here are the kinds of transportation. Here's the kind of transportation that we provide in the different modes. It may be rail, it may be barge, it may be via truck, but making sure that we're inviting those emergency responders to our property, whether it's quarterly, right? But making sure they know what we handle and the kind of emergency response is appropriate for that kind of material and that kind of mode of transportation, I think is absolutely crucial.
Yeah, and under the Code of Federal Regulations, any port that has facilities, we are supposed to train our people, right? Not only our internal staffs and stuff like that, but also work with firefighters and police to make sure that they're properly trained. Now, it's a bit nebulous in the CFRs exactly what is to be included. And taking people on a tour of a cruise ship, firefighters is not, and having lunch is not exactly, what I'm talking about here. And what I think we need to understand is this: 90% of the accidents that occur in the port maritime industry are directly related to human error. We have all these plans that nobody ever looks at. We have all these drills and exercises that we're supposed to do that people don't do. Firefighters, and this is not a criticism of firefighters, but they're used to fighting structural fires, house
Right.
fires, and everything. And you go aboard a vessel and you're fighting a fire on a vessel, right? And it's an entirely different environment. I mean, one of these two firefighters that was killed on the Grimaldi ship was only feet from an escape hatch, right? But was unaware, right, of the structure of the inside of the ship and everything. So people really need to be trained. And, when I was a port director and as a deputy port director, I ran into this circumstance all the time. And the message to port directors and to senior executives in the ports, as well as to our firefighters and our police, you have to pay attention to this. You have to pay attention. I recognize everybody's busy and everybody's getting involved in all sorts of stuff. But the bottom line is that, the first time somebody's killed, everybody looks back and say, oh, we shouldn't have done this, we shouldn't have done that. But, the bottom line, if you pay attention to up front, people don't get killed.
I hear you, but I'm also going to say, especially for some of our listeners that may be new to the industry, it's not just about ports. It's not just about our emergency responders. It's about terminals. It's about barge lines. It's about railroads. A couple years ago, when Dad still owned the railroads, remember I was telling you we did emergency response drills for the railroads. So our local emergency, our county emergency response teams, brought together NOAA, and this was following East Palestine, but simply having a safety plan on the bookshelf is not enough. It needs to be housed at my house. It needs to be housed in my office. It needs to be housed in my car. You don't know when an emergency is going to happen or where you're going to be when it happens. So making sure that you have it and you have it in multiple locations, maybe even digitally, but also that you're practicing it, because once the disaster happens, we do kind of like lose our minds and we're like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? Well, if you're practicing it, it becomes muscle memory, so that when the disaster does happen, it's like that muscle just kicks right into gear and we know what we need to do. But what's interesting about the emergency drills that we did on the railroads a couple years ago is that the firefighters weren't there. We had NOAA, we had the emergency county response teams, but we didn't bring in the firefighters. And so, like, that's the most crucial part of it, right? Is making sure that, if we're handling, fertilizer, ammonium nitrate, et cetera, whatever, that the firefighter knows how to handle that type of material. Because unfortunately, and what we saw in Hanjin and other places is that if you try to fight the wrong fire with the water, you can create an even bigger disaster than what was originally there. So I just think having your plan in place, having multiple locations, practicing the plan, communicating with the right people, the emergency responders, et cetera, is going to set all of us up for success should something happen. And you just never know if it's going to be us or if it's going to be our neighbors. And you just can't. I'm not a gambler. I've never gambled. I've never been good at gambling. And I'm certainly not going to gamble with, the assets, that I serve my community with.
Well, and every time we have an accident, there's always a knee-jerk reaction. Get all these new regulations that come out. We always used to say that, and still do, that most of the regulations out there are written in human blood, and that's really the truth. I think the message for our port people, our terminal operators, our railroads, our ship operators, our barge and tug operators, all of these peoples, is keep in mind this, is that if we're not paying attention to this, if we're not doing and following in our plans, if we're not updating our plans, and if not everybody on our facilities are trained, on our vessels are properly trained and everything, that's negligence on our part,
Oh
right?
my
And
gosh.
it's.
My attorney downstairs, I'm sure, is just giggling right now talking about negligence. So I totally get it. And such a great point. If you know that you could, potentially be injuring somebody by not practicing, by not training properly, could you be held negligent? I would love to bring the attorney up here.
Yeah, well, I know. And people get this false sense of security that, oh, it's not going to happen. I was in Boston, my first week there, somebody was killed, right? When I got up to Portland, we had two people killed in Portland. It wasn't directly on our facility, but it was associated with our facility. We were providing space to tenants and stuff. People get injured, people get hurt, people get run over. And the bottom line here is that we have to pay attention. We have to have a safety culture in place. And we've got to help everybody understand that it goes all the way from the CEO right down to the guy who's sweeping the floors at night, when everybody's gone home, right? And if we don't understand that, we as port leaders, we as industry leaders need to set that forth. And I know people sit there and say, I'm tired of hearing about safety. I'm tired of hearing about security. It seems to be the prevailing subject matter. But you know
Then you're
what?
in the wrong business.
That's right. Exactly. It's gonna happen. It's going to happen in our facilities, and we better get a grip and we better pay attention to it.
That's right. Okay, so what else was talked about? What's the other gossip?
Well, aren't we all holding our breaths waiting for the maritime policy to come out of the new administration? Holy smoke. And I have to give credit to Senator Kelly who filed legislation in essence to try to rebuild and support the Merchant Marine, but I haven't seen any action on the maritime administrator, right?
We don't have an administrator.
I
That's the
know we don't.
problem.
We
There's
don't have
all
an
these
administrator.
national policies being discussed, and we don't have anybody representing us at the table.
And Kelly's legislation also calls for somebody to be at, the cabinet level, not or or sub-cabinet level, basically to keep the whole logistics chain. We haven't fixed the logistics chain. Everybody seems to think that, well, gee, we haven't heard any problems. Amazon's getting their stuff to us on time. Well, the volumes are down. The warehousing issues are still a problem. The terminal hours are still a problem. Labor is still a problem. The only bright spot in this is that the ILA on the Eastern Gulf Coast finally signed, a 6-year agreement, which allows them to continue to work and gives us stability, right? But we haven't fixed the supply chain. And the problem is that in our industry, well, certainly at the political level, we are always reactive and not
Right.
proactive. All right.
Exactly.
We got to get a grip. We got to understand this. Everybody's so tariffs and all the rest of this stuff. The bottom line is, if the cargo was flowing, if the economy was good, the bottom line, if we began to see higher volumes coming in, And we're looking at probably, we're predicting somewhere between 6 and 8% growth on international trade, coming through the ports. But the bottom line is that if there's another thing like what happened with COVID, right, our supply chain would fail. It would fail. And, I see all these different schools and every new schools of logistics coming. Well, it's the same old stuff. They're all teaching the same old stuff. They just renamed it. Bottom line is let's pay attention to it and let's make it work more effectively. So I'm waiting with bait on my breath, right, for the day that we begin to see a cohesive policy. Been waiting since Harry Truman was president. So we'll see.
Is that Senator Kelly out of Arizona that introduced that?
Mark
Isn't that
Kelly,
amazing?
he's a graduate of the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy.
Representing a landlocked state.
That's funny. Right. But well, I did go to
I actually have a meeting request in to meet with him in March, and I have not heard back from his team. So.
Well, yeah, that's sometimes that happens. But yeah, I was at an event at the Great Port of Phoenix one time. So what can I say? But you're right, it is a landlocked state. And one of the concerns I have too is that I still see people sporadically talking about, well, we need to do something with the Jones Act. All right.
Oh my gosh.
And here's the bottom line is when every other country in the world starts doing something with their own cabotage laws, then we should step up as well. But nobody else is doing it. In fact, everybody's getting more protective of their commerce and everything like that. So there's nobody paying attention to it until you have a disaster. Right.
Yeah.
Look at all the stuff going on with flying right now. Right. It just seems like one thing after the other. Well, how many issues do we need to have in our industry? How many problems do we need to face? And how many supply chain clogs up do we need to have right now? And it's not until it happens that somebody's going to say, oh, we should do something. Let's create a task force and let's pick all these key political guys and we'll stick them in that position and they'll solve everything,
Yeah.
Horse hockey.
Horse hockey. I'd like to see some horse hockey, like horses playing hockey. But I want
Yes.
to go back to this because I think it's really important. So not only do we not have a maritime administrator within, housed within the DOT who's sitting at the table kind of like, fighting, saying, "Hey, we're here. Don't forget, that we exist," while you're creating all these like national policies, like the National Multimodal Freight Network map, right? Right now, only like 150 ports are sitting on that map, where over 350 ports exist in the United States, plus thousands of terminals. And if we don't have somebody sitting at the table saying, "Hey, we exist. Don't move forward on implementing this policy until we're at least at the table," I mean, come on.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that, I look at all the departments of transportation, the state departments of transportation, and the current Secretary of Transportation hasn't been in that job long enough to, I think, figure out the whole realm of what transportation is really about. It's been mostly about aviation, for obvious reasons. But I have to say one thing about your inland states, all right, is that various states are paying much closer attention to their intermodal activities, to the rail pieces, to the waterway pieces. How do we utilize the rivers more effectively? But they're making it a policy of the state, right? Which is great because now they're collectively looking at things. And of course, one of the things we always encourage people to think about is create a advisory council or a port council or a transportation council where all the modes of transportation are brought into it, right? So people aren't getting into the bad habit of, well, let's focus on just on the rivers, or let's just focus on the rail,
Right.
or let's just focus on trucks. But they're going to focus on all of it, and it has to be high level. And I have to say that I was very impressed. Tennessee did a great job putting together something very similar, where they're working together. I know Louisiana has been trying to do something, but there's a lot of parochial interest in Louisiana, right? But I see those states are focused on it much more than the coastal states are.
Right,
The coastal
exactly.
states, it's about roads.
And so we're actually trying to put something together like that in the St. Paul area, almost type of mirroring, I can't say that word, almost as a mirror to, back in the day, maybe about 10 years ago, St. Louis used to do a St. Louis port working group. And we would come together once a month. It would be ports, terminals, trucks, barges, railroads, and we would just talk about the freight needs in the what was in that area. It's a bi-state region. And then Bi-State Freightway was created and has done remarkable things for the freight industry, all modes in that, two state kind of region. So I definitely recommend any of our listeners that are interested in mirroring that type of activity, take a look at Bi-State Freightway. Mary Lamy, she's really great, and she's done great things for the region. She's done great things for the region, but also for freight and the infrastructure investments and getting us all to rally around how can we, support each other in talking from the same microphone and using the same words so that we can improve the region as a whole.
Yeah, get out of parochial interest. The Georgia ports has got an inland facility, right, which is close to Tennessee and those areas and stuff. And it is contributing to Savannah and Brunswick being the fastest growing ports in the United States. And of course, Savannah having the largest footprint, one of the fastest growing ports, right now in the world. And I think in the long run, it's because they're recognizing that inland transportation and the connections to the inland states, right, are extremely important, and good intermodal transportation, right? But what they do in Georgia is having a big impact on Tennessee, and will
Absolutely.
have a big impact on Tennessee. It'll have a big impact on your river system, right?
Absolutely.
I certainly hope St. Bernard Parish, when it gets finally getting completed, is going to be able to shift some of the cargo back to coming into New Orleans, as opposed to coming through Prince Rupert, but we take this myopic look of transportation. We see it's what's in front of us, and we don't see the big picture.
Exactly. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that because, the freight, it may come into Georgia, Brunswick, Savannah, but it doesn't necessarily always stay there. So I've heard you in this conversation mention the state level multiple times, but because it is interstate commerce, because it is a federal benefit, because our freight doesn't stop at the state line, it does put the emphasis on our federal agencies to really focus on freight and the movement of freight. Now, I'll tell you, I have had just the hardest time in Washington right now, in trying to work with different federal agencies like the Infrastructure Permitting Agency, like the Department of Transportation, like Fish and Wildlife, like U.S. Army Corps, like U.S. Coast Guard. Those offices are so ghostly right now. And I get what they're trying to do, but gosh darn, we still have to move freight. We still have to have meaningful conversations about how to move freight, how to, continue growing our U.S. healthy supply chain. But how do we do that without federal workers in some of these offices?
Well, maybe the thing to do is, we're always talking about the strength of states' rights. Maybe it's time for the states to start working closely together with less federal influence.
Oh, you bite your tongue.
No, and I'm serious. I mean, look at the aspect of what's happened with USAID. Whether you agree with it or not, they buy an enormous amount of your agricultural products, right? Your shippers sell that stuff to companies like Bunge and Cargill and stuff like that. But a lot of that cargo gets containerized or gets sent out by ship, and it's going into the. Well, all of that has come to a close. All right. What type of an impact is that going to have, on the agricultural production in your area that has been moving by, empty container, that has been moving by barge, and the aspect of it is that what they do at the federal level has an enormous impact on, the average citizen and on the average farmer. Whether you agree with it or not doesn't make a difference. It's still going to have an impact, right? And why I think that we see the federal government rolling over all the time, right? And for many years, the states sort of led the charge on all of this. What the federal government did was stop the states from shooting at each other. So it's really time for the states to start working together and coordinating. And I know
Only
that's
if it only
scary.
if it were in a productive way. And I have not seen that just yet. I haven't even seen that out of the federal government. You know, I have meetings that I'm trying to schedule, you know, as a national, you know, association representing national interests. I can't even get into certain offices because I don't live in that state. Excuse me, you serve for the federal government on federal committees. I don't need to live in your state for you to represent me because you are a voice on a federal committee.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I have to give credit to my home state, to Senator Collins and Senator King, always have paid attention in a much broader perspective. I mean, Senator Collins really led the charge on a lot of the post 9/11 security stuff, as did Senator Snowe when she was in office. So the thing is, you cannot just look to the borders of your state, right? And I'm constantly discouraged by the level of effort that needs to get something done in DC, and things that never get done. We have international things that we follow, like regulations like SOLAS and stuff like that, that have never been approved by Congress.
Right.
Never been approved by Congress. I mean, for crying out loud, get a grip, you know.
Let's cry out loud. What would you tell Elon Musk right now if he were listening?
I think I would say to Elon, you know what, Elon? I understand if you're going to cut the budget, give us the recommendations, but stop with the actions, right? You know, I have to say that honestly, the way a lot of this was handled, you know, if I was running a corporation, I would never handle it like this, right? I think it's very sad to see people who are just put out on the street without even figuring out what it is that they do. You know, let's just clean everybody out and see how things go. Now, we all recognize that there's a percentage of the federal government that, you know, it could function without. All right. And I certainly understand that effort. And I'm not a big fan of big federal government agencies and stuff. Right. But my concern about what's going on is, first of all, how is Elon Musk, not, you know, who's a citizen of wherever, right, have such an influence on the federal government? I don't understand. Do we not have people in our own government? Do we not have economists? Do we not have transportation professionals and stuff like that? Who
well,
should
actually,
be?
we don't, because they won't meet with us if we had them. Some of them, we don't have them. So yeah, no, Bureau of Transportation's statistics, they won't meet with us. Department of Transportation doesn't have a maritime administrator. I hear what you're saying, but also these people are non-existent and not willing to work with us.
Well, I think they're scared to work with us. I think that's what it boils down to. You know, I have friends who work for the federal government and go like, you know what? I don't want anybody to know who I am. I don't want to get any emails. I don't want to raise my head up, because one of the first things that went out, you know, from the federal government, you know, from the president's office was, you know, unless you've cleared public information, you know, through one of our appointees and stuff like that, you know, you're not allowed to put it out. So I think there's a deep concern. Everybody's keeping their head low. And I understand that. But the thing is that our industry continues to move forward, right? With or without politics, the industry continues to move forward, right? And the bottom line is that we have critical issues that have to be addressed, issues that have to be addressed on the river system, on the coastal system. Everybody's scratching their head about the future of funding. You know, we recognize that we're well into the funding, you know, through the PDIP program and stuff like that. Do we apply again? You know, well, so far, nobody's told us not to, right? But the reality, I think, in all of this is that there's so much uncertainty. And you know what? We don't work well with uncertainty.
I don't. I certainly don't. I love my routine. I hate surprises. So I'm right there with you. I don't work well with uncertainty. But there's a couple of things that are for certain, is that IRPT and the IAMPE, we are going to continue to be here as a resource for all of our members. I know that you work very hard in providing those resources digitally and in person for your members. So where are you going next?
Well, I'm very pleased to see that we have worldwide, we've had 3,000 people plus who have been certified, you know, and as you know, we're the only association that does professional port and maritime certification, right? Many of your members, you know, have gone through a certification program, which we're very happy about. You know, we have expanded into international markets. Hopefully soon, you know, we're in Canada. We've already offered Spanish language programs, hoping to be more in Latin America, Brazil, certainly Australia. We have programs right now planned for New Orleans, Baltimore, and the Port of New York and New Jersey, and several other programs that are moving forward. Want to get back to Hawaii and do a program out there. So we're trying to take the programs out to different people geographically to make it easier for them. But I think in the long run, the one thing that has been very positive, right, and you see it on your side as well as I see it on the coastal side, is that there are more professionals who are coming from the industry who are coming up and now leading our ports, our terminals, and many of these facilities. And that has been a positive move because, dare I say, right, that this has for a number of years, certainly in my early history in this industry, been kind of a political dumping ground. And fortunately, it's not, it's becoming less and less. Doesn't mean that we don't have to understand politics, but when you look at all the ports, when you look at the people like Beth Rooney, graduate of Fort Schuyler, right? When you look at somebody like Griff Lynch or Ed McCarthy, graduates of Fort Schuyler. When you look at Captain Murray at Port Canaveral, right? Graduate of Maine Maritime Academy. And not just maritime people, but people who have been in the industry who have come up through the industry, right? And that's wonderful because this is a complex business. All right. And we can sometimes get through because we're making so much money in it, right? But the bottom line, it's a complex business. There's a lot of politics involved, a lot of technical expertise required. And the bottom line here is that unless you have good people like yourself and the people you represent, right? Unless you have good people running these ports, it's going to put us at a disadvantage. Go to Rotterdam and see who's running that port. Go to Singapore, see who's running those ports. Go to the Chinese ports and see who's running those ports. They're not a political appointee, right?
Sure,
They are
absolutely.
professionals.
So if we had a listener on here today and they wanted to come to the next IAMPE class to meet you in person, where would that be?
Oh, to meet me in person. Well, it would probably be Baltimore. I'm doing
Okay.
the program in Baltimore, and then I'll be doing the program in New York and New Jersey.
Okay.
But we have a distinguished instructor, Dale Murray, who is going to be teaching the course in New Orleans. He's an exceptional individual, ran the Watco facilities, the port operations in Watco for many years, right? And he's in the National Guard, and he's done an outstanding job. So, from my perspective, unlike you, I'm getting older, right? And I think that we now have 12 well-qualified faculty, in the program who are teaching a wide variety of things, everything from logistics to inland port activities and coastal port activities. And it's good to have that because it's part of our succession plan, and I'm very
Absolutely.
happy to, we've had a great, you were the first people to have an association with us,
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome.
I remember the first day we met, you go like, who's this blue water guy? My God,
How do we
what are we gonna?
inject brown water into his veins? Well, for
Yes.
any of our listeners that want to meet me, we actually have quite a few meetings coming up. Our IRPT Spring Basin meetings are upon us. We have the Upper Mississippi River Basin meeting and the Lower Mississippi River Basin meeting both in March. We have the Illinois River Basin meeting, the Ohio River Basin meeting up in Pittsburgh, both in April. So I do hope that our listeners will let me know that you've heard us on Doc Talk, that you've come to the basin meeting. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to meet our fans and see our people.
And when you sit down with the Don, you better straighten him out. Well, get him to pay attention to our world. All right?
I'm gonna let him know we matter.
Absolutely. That's the important thing.
My friend, thank you as always. It's been a pleasure seeing you again, and until next time.
Sounds wonderful. I look forward to it. And I'm very pleased that our conversation's getting a little bit more lively. Nothing worse than a boring podcast.
That's right. Thank you so much. Thank you to our listeners all over the United States and beyond. We shall see you next time.
Take care, everybody.